Hello, you assholes, and welcome to Chunder Smith. I am Brian.
And I'm Bob.
And what are we talking about today, Bob?
We're going to talk about hostile workplace environments, you piece of crap.
Piece of crap? Thanks, dude. I've never had anybody say such nice things to me before.
All right, no, let's talk about it. So, I seem to recall, a while ago, I used to do the corporate thing, and...
Wait, question. Are we going to change the names of the guilty to protect them, or are we just going to be straightforward, honest about stuff?
No, I'm going to change the names of some people, because I don't feel like besmirching anybody. And, I mean, nobody did anything bad enough to warrant any kind of serious backlash, but I'd just as soon avoid it.
You know, that's awfully nice of you, man.
I'm a very polite... Nice of you. I'm a real friendly fella.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I should probably be a lot kinder. I don't know, but
Well, either which way. So, hostile workplace. I'm going to tell you the story of two. Oh gosh, I've told the story truthfully so many times that it's kind of hardwired. I'm going to call them. Who were some of the founding fathers that really didn't like each other?
Let's see.
Benjamin Burr and
Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. Although I wouldn't, it's kind of generous to call Aaron Burr a founding father. I think Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were at loggerheads quite often. They had a kind of a frenemy setup going on. So
all right.
So we could do Adams and Jefferson, or we could Tom and John? Tom and John, that works.
Tom and Jerry.
Tom and John.
Tom and John. You know, I think maybe calling these guys like the Founding Fathers is a little too honorable. I'm going to call them Tom and Jerry. Like the
Tom and Jerry works.
All right, let's do it.
Tom and Jerry.
So in terms of a hostile workplace environment, let's talk about Tom and Jerry. So I used to go to I went to a lot of colleges because I'm a vagrant and I can't commit to anything. And I was going.
Very true, folks. I can attest to this. He is indeed walks around looking like a drown victim.
I do. I look like a.
Love you. All right.
All right, you Chunder Smith. Listen up. No. Shut up. So I was going to school with Jerry. We took a bunch of classes together. He just needed classes because he was. It was basically to keep tax credits away from his parents, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And so I got into school as well. We went to the same classes because he had a car and I did not. And so Jerry and I are going to class, and there's another guy whose name is also Jerry, and this is not incidental. There's a guy he knows from high school whose name is also Jerry, but for the sake of this discussion, we will now call Tom the Cat.
Okay. Okay.
By which I mean these guys had the same first name, and that's important later. So they're both working at the same company that I was, and they're both working customer service. Okay. Now Jerry was the head of customer service, and in this young corporation, they were just making money hand over fist. It was the right time, the right product, the right market, and I'm going to decline to get too specific about that because I don't want anybody to get in any kind of trouble. So, but it was a good, solid business. It was on the up and up. It was just highly profitable. And so far as the corporation was concerned, the boss wasn't even really taking much of a paycheck. He gave himself minimum wage. The guy was so devout, like his business was his church and his God.
Okay.
The guy who's the head of customer service had been there for a real long time, but he wasn't one of the founding members. He wasn't one of the investors. So you've got these other guys. We're all just kids, basically, you know, 19, 20, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Nobody's over 22 in this whole scenario.
Oh, man, that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. So we naturally, you know, lacking years of wisdom that would benefit, you know, behoove a young...
Okay. Just going to throw out there real quick. The reason why that's a recipe for disaster is before the age of 25, there's certain parts of the male brain that are not fully developed, which means that risk-taking is at a higher level and there's less cooperative behavior. And this phenomena is so well observed and so well documented that insurance rates drop after a man turns 25 because of their probability of them getting in a car accident drops significantly. So, continue. So
that literally leads into what I'm about to say.
Perfect.
So, they say the greatest cure for criminality is a 30th birthday. And that's the darn truth of it. Your testosterone plummets, and your cortisol goes up a little, your estrogen goes up a bit, and men just become more caring, more nurturing, more cooperative, typically. Yeah. I mean, there's kind of a reason that officers in the Army will tend to be a little older. Yeah. This is actually a valuable leadership characteristic. So, where was I going with that?
Okay, so nobody was over the age of 22.
Yeah, nobody's over the age of 22. You don't know, like, everybody's young. It just, and making kind of hasty decisions. So the head of customer service was getting more and more jealous. Jerry is getting more and more jealous of the boss because he saw the kinds of numbers that were going through. He was aware of what was on the books, and decides to come up with himself a little plot, a little scandal. And so he recruits Tom, the cat, from one of our college classes. Tom is a diligent worker, cool guy. I'm still friends with him all these years later. And Tom the cat happens to have the exact same first name as the guy named, you know, that we're codenaming Jerry. And so so Jerry goes and sets up a personal private account at a bank. And starts issuing refunds for people who are returning products, but the money's not going back into the company. Every so often, he's shoveling it off to the side, and he figures he won't get caught for at least a certain amount of time. And he's only signing his name, let's say, Tom.
So he's using the other guy as a patsy.
Uh-huh. So he sets up the other guy as a patsy, exactly. And the boss finally, behind the scenes, has hired a private investigator. And this guy must have been incredibly incompetent at his job because he pinpoints Tom as the culprit. And the guy, or accountant guy, just this little, you know, kind of diminutive redheaded guy with merely an accounting major in college, you know, young fella. Says, hang on a second, boss man. The boss man had grabbed Tom, slammed his head against the wall, screaming at him, you mother effer, this, that, the other thing, how dare you? You betrayed me. I treated you like a brother. And Tom, the patsy, is just panicking. What? I didn't do anything. You're being screamed at. You're a liar, you son of a... You know, just really a lot of a terrifying moment. And I'm riding around with Jerry, who says that he's been able to earn extra money on the weekend by working for his old mechanic boss, that he's just like, no, that's fine, I can just rebuild these things, and his lies got more and more extravagant, but I didn't have the wherewithal to question the guy, because I guess really is a story of my own incorrigible stupidity, my eagerness to trust people, which enables more often than not abusers. And in this guy's case, he finally did get caught because our accounting guy pointed out, hang on a second, Tom doesn't sign his papers this way, let's go back. And there was 121 transactions, and they went back to the very first one, and it said Jerry, and they got Jerry that same day. So
that's,
but hang on a second.
That's simultaneously amazing and horrendous.
Yes, but hang on, it's not quite over yet. So okay. Jerry and I still had class that night, and unfortunately my ride had just been arrested, and I couldn't bloody well drive off in his 1969 fastback Camaro with a posi rear end.
So you were stranded.
I was stranded, and I needed to get a ride to class. So that was obnoxious, but it gets even better than that. You see, Tom was also my roommate at the time. We lived in the same house. We never saw each other. Worked in different apartments, went to work at different times. And we were we played a lot of Warhammer together, and being young and dumb, we'd yell at each other and get belligerent, you know, get foolish and yell at each other. It actually scared my mom, which she didn't have the courage to tell me until later. I'm really sorry about that. But so we weren't That's always fair. On the most talking of terms, and I was a real lousy friend to him. We'd make plans and I'd break them because I'd have what I now understand to be anxiety attacks, social anxiety attacks.
Okay.
He'd want to go to the club and it sounded so good, but as soon as I had the possibility, I was like, I can't go, I have any excuse will do. So I would screw him over again and again. I mean, I was really lousy to this guy. But,
you know, to show a little kindness to yourself, I think when it comes to the, to the anxiety attack part, that you need to be a little kinder to yourself in that regard.
Well, I didn't know what it was, so.
Yeah, you didn't know what it was, and that's fair.
It doesn't excuse me making constant excuses, you know what I mean?
I didn't
have another way to cope with it that I knew about.
And that part you could have been a better friend at, but the anxiety attacks are anxiety attacks, man.
Yeah, and I get that. All right, well, there's a little more to the story. So, I get a phone call around 2 that morning, and Jerry's calling me from jail and saying, Bob, I need you to bail me out, man. And I get the info he needs $500. So I'm on the phone. I get on the phone with some of my best friends calling in favors. Hey, can I borrow $200, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
And so I've got my friends calling in favors, and some of them are so broke they got to call in favors to be able to help me call in their favor. And Tom, living at my house, says, you don't listen. You never listen. I say, okay, well, I'm all ears right now, so why don't you tell me? And he just keeps yelling at me, no, you don't listen. No, you don't listen. And I sit there, and I'm like sitting outside his door for an hour waiting for him to come out, talk at like 4 in the morning. And that's not happening. I'm on the phone with a bunch of people till dawn. And, finally, Tom talks to my mom. My mom's up. And good old Tom talks to my mom. And my mom says, Tom has something to say. And I was like, well, I've been asking him, and he just keeps yelling at me. So, because I was asking Tom if he would help me bail out Jerry. Can you imagine in his circumstance being asked such a thing?
That would be horrendous.
So he didn't know how to cope with that either. You know, say that guy framed me for a crime. Nobody would tell me what was happening. Because I was stuck there at work. You know, hey, is somebody going to tell me what's going on? Boss man says, it's none of your business. Accountant guy says, you know, you need to stay out of this.
Which, to be fair, is true in most circumstances.
In most circumstances, but it was this perfect storm where this guy still had an out because I had been so incredibly gaslit and triangulated.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a mad story, so that was kind of a strangely hostile work environment.
Yeah. You know, I don't have any stories at that level. Of crazy for the hostile work environments, but I can totally understand working in a hostile work environment.
Well, you used to on occasion work in some pretty wretched places.
So where do I start? Do I start with the residential treatment center, or do I start with the schools?
Yes. Just flip a coin, man.
Or do I start with my first marriage?
Well, would you describe that as a work environment?
You know, yeah, because apparently I was the Mr. Moneybags that was paying for her schooling and everything else.
That is really detestable.
Yeah. It was totally screwed up, and if I had had any cojones, I would have insisted that she get a goddamn job and actually provide for the family in some way. She did get part-time work here and there. So I'm not going to say that she didn't contribute, and I'm not trying to smear mud here, but it definitely was a hostile work environment, especially now that I know the information that I know, and it's quite damning. But again, not here to smear mud, but I will say that the last 3.5 years of my marriage was pure hell. And let's say that lamp was lit by gas. Okay.
What does that mean?
I was gaslit a lot. I was put in circumstances where there was no right answer and I had no choice. And then when I got angry, cause my anxiety response is actually to go to anger, which I only discovered later. But I would get angry over being, basically given a no-win situation. And the result was anger. And then I was made to feel shame over being angry, over those circumstances.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd say that's a hostile work environment. But let's talk about real work here, like the sort where you have to file taxes and pay the man. So
you were talking about some of the schools you were working in. Like, did you ever work in a place where somebody had it in for you?
Yes. I have gotten better in recent years, but I have not had the best track history for being the most socially aware. It's a skill that I practiced and learned, and I've since become better at it. Although sometimes I don't give a fuck. That's actually one of, I think my gifts is that I can see social convention now, but sometimes I can throw it into the proverbial blender and watch it get blended up like a frog in the blender.
I've noticed more of once you are aware not only that there is a rule set, especially in a social circumstance, but what is the proper rule set. I think it's a lot like musicianship, where you establish rules and you know when it would be an aesthetic decision to break a particular rule.
Exactly.
But it's just noise unless you know what the rules are.
In these circumstances with the hostile work environment, let's just put it this way. The way that schools typically are structured is the ultimate authority within the school is the principal and or the assistant principal, vice principal, whatever the hell you want to call them. And typically the way it works is if somebody has a complaint against the other person, that somebody goes to the other person and whines at them or bitches at them or loses their shit and acts in a very unprofessional manner, which from my understanding is actually more typical and unfortunate. And I'll be honest, I have been that person before because it's a hostile environment. It's an environment that breeds hostility. And then typically the principal or the assistant principal's response as the kind of commander in chief, captain of the boat, whatever, instead of doing something called restorative justice, which is where the aggrieved parties meet with the neutral party and discuss it. like, you know, actual adults. Instead, what typically happens is that the tattled upon individual gets called in. Typically, it starts with an email or a message or a note delivered from the office saying the principal wants to talk to you after school. And that's it. And that is, in and of itself, that breeds anxiety out the wazoo. And then you go up to the office and you're not sure why. And then you find out that somebody grumped about you about something, and you can't, they won't tell you what they grumped at you, what they're upset about. They're upset about something that may or may not have happened, and you can't get specifics from them because that would reveal the identity of the person for whom has ratted upon you for whatever thing that you may or may not be aware that you have done wrong. You are then censored and told, or censured, I guess censured would be the appropriate term, and told to straighten up and fly right. And depending on how the individual approaches it, my first principal, much at the particular school I'm thinking of, I mean, much kinder. The second principal, his replacement, an incorrigible asshole, just... I don't understand how he became a leader of any sort. Minimal compassion, and the assistant principal that worked with him was the brown noser of the highest degree, and everybody saw through his bullshit, and nobody trusted him. And so an environment that was already toxic and hostile upon the leaving of the first principal has, as of the last I've heard, created a beautiful, and by beautiful I mean horrendous, pressure cooker of things falling apart. It really makes me sad.
I gotta hear this. What kind of falling apart are we talking about?
Let's see. backbiting amongst teachers, a mass exodus of teachers. I happen to know that at least 25% of the faculty, confirmed, by the way, not, this is not hearsay, although I won't specify who told me or what.
It might be heresy.
But I'm not interested in someone losing their job just because they're jumping ship, early. But, at least 25% of the faculty and possibly more are looking for jobs elsewhere and actively applying and trying to leave, which is, that's horrendous, man. When you're talking about a school that serves over 1,000 kids, that's awful.
Yeah, it is.
And let's see. I happen to know that. So the role I took in the school was in the special education team, and I tended to support the higher needs kids, more behavioral concerns and challenges, and whatnot. And I was good at it because guess what? I treated the kids like people. Shocker.
That's impossible.
You treat the kid like a person, and lo and behold, behavior problems start disappearing. I happen to know that...
Hey, you can't say that. That's forbidden knowledge.
Oh, okay. That is forbidden knowledge. I can't... The kids aren't people. I take it back. I take it back.
Don't say those things. Those hurtful like, things you're saying.
all the things that the education views children as are true. They're just robots that need to have information shoved in their heads so they can be little taxpayers, right? That's what you want me to say, right? That's what you want me to say, okay?
Yeah.
I'll say it. Just don't bring me in and talk to me about somebody else complaining about me, please.
Don't be a sissy.
Anyway, so I also happen to know that... that teachers have and the teacher's assistants have been instructed that they're not allowed to be nice to the kids who are in trouble. And
what does that even mean?
Like, you know, if the kid has a behavioral problem or challenge and they're they need to be in like a type of suspension, or they need to be in a sort of a support role where they're out of class temporarily. I love how schools get around the limitation on the number of suspensions by doing an in-school suspension where they're isolated in a room where they're watching the class through an iPad that's really poor quality audio. And so they're at school, they're getting instruction. That counts, right? It's an interesting little workaround that is in my opinion, highly unethical. But, you know, in those settings, the people who are put in charge to handle it, they're going to try to work with the kids and they're going to try to focus on reinforcing pro-social behaviors. And reinforcing means being kind. And certain individuals have been instructed that they are not allowed to be kind to these kids.
That's a really weirdly specific instruction, you know what I mean?
It's stupid. It's stupid, and it's a hostile work environment, and the hostile work environment includes children, in this case. And it's one of my number one frustrations with public education. I'm not frustrated with the individuals who are doing an amazing job, and I would say that I included myself in that for a time until I got sick and tired of the fucking bullshit and was tired of eating crow. I'll give you an example. I'll give you my mic drop example. My last fight that I had before I left that school, and I had already had a job. They knew I was leaving. But as a special ed teacher, I had, you know, kids on my caseload, and let's call them Henry and Julia. Okay. And so Henry and Julia were two kids on my caseload, and I get contacted by the assistant principal and told that Julia has been suspended for the last few days of school because of a fight that Julia got in with another student, which involved claws out and attempting to eye gouge.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's not awesome.
No, that's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie, man.
and so Julia gets suspended, and I happen to know a little bit of history about Julia and how she has gone for years of having challenges at the end of the school year. Well, challenges of throughout the year, and there are some social skills that were needing to be trained and things like that. And I was making great progress with Julia. And so this was heartbreaking to me because I was hoping that Julia could participate with the end of the year activities. And Julia was actually excited. She was excited to hang out with her friends and participate. And so I argued with the assistant principal and I said, if Julia is with me at the end of the at these events, can she participate? I will be alongside Julia. I will take the time that I have set aside to do other things, and I'll do those other things that need to be done on my time so that Julia can participate. And the assistant principal reluctantly agrees. And
why the reluctance though?
Because he's an incorrigible asshole. Anyways, that's a long story, and that's a story for another time. The longest short of it is that I'm pretty sure he didn't like me and talked shit behind my back, and I have some pretty good evidence for that, but it's irrelevant because I'm out of that situation. Anyways, so days later, I find out from Julia that she's upset because Henry, who is also one of my students, who is the person who got in the fight with Julia and who actually, from talking with other people, I found out was the one who initiated the fight, was not suspended and was allowed to have full access to the end of the year activities. And I was furious because, first off, as a special ed teacher, I'm supposed to be informed when any of my students are in a fight, and especially when both of my students are in a fight and information was withheld. And by the way, this incorrigible asshole of a assistant principal, he is known for doing this sort of thing, telling only slightly small pieces of information. The entire school is infuriated with him for playing this stupid bullshit game of creating, you know, need to know information conditions instead of just telling people what they need to know so that way they can do their job right. So I go to talk to said assistant principal, and I walk in and I say, can you please tell me why Julia is suspended and not allowed to participate, but Henry is not? And I get this whole hum-ha story about history of behavior and how Julia is known for these sorts of behaviors, but Henry is not, which is bullshit, by the way, because Henry had his own challenges in other behaviors. But that shouldn't be a factor when addressing a behavior when we're talking about kids. There's a lot of research to look at that. Anyways, to back that up, I mean. But, you know, he gives me this whole hum-ha story, and I say, okay, fair enough, but you made a decision without me being involved. And as a special ed teacher, I am legally required by law to be participating in these things because I am the one who's in charge of their individualized education plan, including behavior plans, which both of them have, which I was supposed to be involved with. And you withheld information from me. And he looks at me, he goes, I don't know what you want me to do, Brian. And it was almost exactly like that. And I just sat there. Yes, I know. He pulls that bullshit a lot with people. And I sat there for about 20 seconds, maybe 30. It was kind of uncomfortable. I saw him squirming. It made me very happy. And
I looked up at him. Brian, 31 minutes are up. Yeah, it's been 31 minutes.
Seriously, let me finish the story.
You got to put it into it. No, it's over, man.
I'm about to, okay. Shut the hell up. So I look up at him and I say, you know, I just realized that I'm fighting a fight for somebody who's not even here. I feel bad for my replacement. And I walked out of the room and it was the most powerful mic drop ever.
All right. Mic drop there. Drop the mic right now.
No, I'm not done. But please. Hey, come on. We're talking about hostile work environments. You're making a hostile work
environment. No, it's 31 minutes, 32 minutes. But Brian, it's over.
No, you're stopping an asshole.